Morning. Today's daf is Nun in Masechet Nida. We're starting today with the Mishnah on Mem Tesamid Beis. Mishnayos now, from this point for the next couple of days, are going to be a little bit of a detour from our topic of Nida. And the reason why is because of the first Mishnah. The first Mishnah of this Perek talked about the Siman Tachton, Siman Elyon, establishing adulthood for a woman, bring her from the stage of Ketana to Nara. So Nara is her first stage of adulthood. So there are two simonim. There's a simon of the Tachton and that of the Elyon. And the Mishnah taught about which one is the primary simon, which one's the secondary simon. Which one comes first, which one comes second. Which one can exist without the other. So those are the basic discussions that we're having in the first sugya of the Masechta. So as long as we talked about things that are two factors, interplay between the two factors, which one's primary, which one's secondary, which one can exist without the other, so then the Mishnayos decide, okay, take off. And from this point going forward, so we discuss many other topics that have this interplay between two factors. So on yesterday's daf on Memtes, so the Mishnah and Amud Aleph talked about Kli Cheres, a hole that's Machnes and Motzi. And we talked about the relationship between Machnes and Motzi. We talked about an extra finger on a human, where they talked about the two factors of bone and fingernail, and which one is the primary factor, which one's the secondary factor. Yesterday we spoke about a Kli that's Metame Tumas Medrus versus just a Stam Kli that's Metame Tumas Ohel. And can it be one without the other? The answer to all these questions is yes, meaning there's a primary and a secondary, in all the examples that are given. The Mishnah continued yesterday, which is serving on the bench and being a judge for a capital case. Can you be a judge for a civil case? If you're qualified to serve on a civil case, can you serve on a capital case? So these are the discussions that we had since the beginning of the Perek. And so for every Mishnah, it's going to take us to a new topic. We're on the Mishnah on the bottom of Mem Tesamid Beis, called HaKashal Adon, Kashal Ha'id. Well, if you can sit on the bench, then you can testify. But the opposite's not true. V'yesha Kashal Ha'id, V'yena Kashal Adon. Now, you could testify, but you can't sit on the bench. Okay, so, every single person that is able to sit on the bench and judge a case is able to testify. What about the reverse? What's wrong with the verse? And so the Gemara starts off, so when our Mishnah is describing somebody that could testify but can't serve as a judge, we're talking about somebody who is blind in one eye. So somebody who's blind in one eye, Rashi, in the bottom of the Amud, so he could testify. So first of all, Rashi points out, which I kind of feel is intuitive, and we all would have figured that out on our own, and that is if you're blind in both eyes, so you can't testify. Right? Even without the Torah Kedosha, I think we all would have figured that out. I understand justice is blind, but if you can't see, there's really nothing that that you could testify about. But assume
where you overheard, you could testify.
That's true. But you have to see. The Torah says Ora'ah. Torah says that there has to be visualization. Fine. So blind in both eyes, you're obviously disqualified for both. The Chiddush, obviously, is that let's say you're blind in one eye. So when you're blind in one eye, so you do have vision, but you just don't have binocular vision. So as far as Aegis is concerned, it's interesting. If I were to guess, I would have guessed wrong. All right? As far as Aegis is concerned, so binocular vision is not critical. And as long as you can see in one eye, that's enough. As far as being a judge is concerned, oh no, for that you have to see in both eyes. Again, I absolutely would have gotten it wrong if I had a guess. Okay, fine. So the Gemara now points out that's our Mishnah. That's who our Mishnah is describing. And then the Gemara goes and identifies who's the author of this position. And in just a moment we're going to continue. Can you think of anyone else? Anyone else who fits the bill of this Mishnah? Because as far as the Gemara is concerned, that's it. The Gemara is not going to discuss. The Gemara is not going to discuss anybody else in terms of who fits the bill of our Mishnah. But can you think of anybody else? So Phil did. And Phil said, what about a woman? So there are those who can testify but can't judge. Now, woman, huh?
She can judge.
So in other words, and she can't testify.
Right.
Okay, fine. So now, presumably, a woman can judge, but a woman can't testify. Now, how do I know a woman can judge? Because, you know, I listen to the Haftorah. I listen to the Haftorahs. And I really should know the Navi to begin with. Okay, but That's neither here nor there. But and Haftaras B'Shalach, longest Haftarah of the year. So there is the story of Devar, and then the Shiras Devar. We do Perek Dal and Perek Hay of Shoftim. Fine. So the so. Okay, the Eidus Isha, they qualify for Eidus Isha, but in terms of general the general judicial process, so they can't testify. So they seemingly now are that's going to be an issue. So why isn't the Mishnah addressing them, or at least not addressing, but why isn't the Mishnah considering them in terms of this halacha? So if take a look at Tos on top of the Amud Aleph of Nun Amud Aleph. Right, Eidus Isha, Eidus Isha. It's not 100%, but those are exceptional. Those are exceptional scenarios. Okay, anyway, so let's see Tosfos. So Tosfos writes on the top of the Amud, Kolakash Ladon Kash Laid Vim Tamar, Vare Isha Dikshir Ladon Ki Dichsi Bedvara Vihisha Fata Es Yisrael. So we know that Beisahi. So we know that Dvara was a judge. We also know that a woman can't testify. Let me breathe before getting on to the next point of Tosos. So first of all, Tosos establishes that a woman can be a judge. Evidence point number one, the Navi. The Navi tells us in Sefer Shoftim, Perek Dal, Perek Hey, that Dvorah was a judge. Okay, that's evidence, piece of evidence number one. Number two, Tosfos points out the Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin says that men and women are on par with one another as far as onshin is concerned, and not only in terms of receiving the punishment, but also in terms of adjudicating as well. So there are two very strong proofs that women can serve as a judge. We also know, now I can go on to the next part of Tosfos, Vishah Psula La'id, a woman can't testify, Kedamar B'Perek Shavuos Ha'idus. Okay, and we know that a woman can't testify. She is disqualified. There are exceptional cases, as a number of people here pointed out, in which a woman can testify, but me'ikar adin, a woman cannot testify. So, and then, if you think about it, meaning the problem is really pronounced because not only does the Gemara not add that to the list, but it goes against what the Mishnah is saying. Because the Mishnah tells us that anyone who could judge could serve as a witness, but the opposite's not true. And here we have now, if we're correct, which seemingly we are, here we have a scenario where someone can testify and can serve as a judge. Okay.
If somebody can be a judge and cannot testify.
Right. So it goes against the Mishnah. All right, so Tosfos over here offers a number of suggestions. This is short Tosfos, so I'll run through it. So the first answer of Tosfos, which quite frankly is fascinating, is that the Mishnah was only addressing men, meaning, right, whenever doing a study, so you have to identify who your population is, right, and then you'll do the study. So in terms of our Mishnah was only addressing men, and then the comparison between serving on the bench and being a witness. But enachinami, meaning as far as women is concerned, so yeah, they could serve as a judge, but they can't testify. Okay, and our Mishnah is only addressing men. First answer of Tosfos is fascinating because Tosfos basically says we're right. We're right about our assertion. And then as far as the Mishnah is concerned, we'll just narrow the Mishnah down in terms of who it's describing. Fine. Inami, but then Tosfos gives other answers as well. Where the other answers of Tosfos, there's two more coming up, are really going to challenge the assertion that was made in the beginning of Tosfos. Inami, nihi, dibi, nidon, and havi, isha, bechlal. Mikom, akom, bedayanam, ein, isha, bechlal. So first of all, that Gemara in Gittin that we quoted, it just means that men and women are on par with one another in terms of punishment, and eligibility to become punished, but not in terms of serving on the bench. Udvara haisadana api hadibur. And as far as Dvar is concerned, so that's anecdotal evidence. It's api hadibur. It was a special circumstance. Kadosh Baruch Hu at that point in time said that it was okay. But it is not meant to serve as a prototype for other women serving as judges. Inami Tosfos gives the third answer. Lo haisadana ela melamedes lahem hadinim. So third possible answer is that she did not actually judge, but in other words, she knew the halachas. She knew the halachas, and they asked her the question, what's the halach over here, what's the halach over there? And she would teach the judges exactly what to do. So she would give instruction of how to judge, but she herself didn't serve on the bench, and she herself didn't judge. Answers number 2 and 3 obviously challenge the assertion that a woman can serve as a judge, and then you're going to just have to deal with, and what about the story? What about the story of Dvorah in Sefer Shoftim? Okay. So anyway, so certainly a really interesting aside from the Gemara. Let's go back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says that here's our rule. The rule is that if you can judge, so you can testify. But there are people who can testify that can't serve as a judge. And now we've narrowed it down to who's that describing? Summa b'achas me'enaf. Somebody who's blind in one eye. So umani. And now we are on the top of Nun Amud Aleph. And who is the author of this position? Rabbi Meir d'Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Brisa, Ayah Rabbi Meir Omer. Ma'ata melomer al piyam yeh kol riv v'chol nega. V'chi ma'inyan rivim eitzol negayim. So in Parsha Shoftim, the Torah says that al piyam, based on their mouth, we're going to resolve all debates and negayim. Now negayim, right? Describing Kohanim, by the way. Kohanim can look at a nega. But anyway, the Torah puts together two seemingly disparate topics. One, rivim, adjudication. And two is nega, and that's the ras. So, and the Torah puts them in the same pasuk together, and here we have a classic hekesh. When the Torah takes two ideas, disparate, and puts them in the same pasuk together, so what the Torah is allowing us to do now is to learn one from the other. Which halachas are we learning from one to the other? And actually, we're going to go in two directions. And the Gemara now spells it out. What do the two have to do with one another? Mekesh, rivim, and negayim. And so therefore, we have a hekesh. Number one. Manigayim bayom, dechsiva bayom, heiros bo, afrivim bayom. So when it comes to nega, so nega has to be seen during the day. It can't be seen at night. So, and the same thing is true, regarding the judgment and adjudicating. It can only be done during the day. Number two, manigayim shelo besuma, dechsiva lechol mare einei hakohen, afrivim shelo besuma. And just like nega has to be done by a Kohen who could see, and could see in both of his eyes, he has binocular vision, so too, when it comes to Rivim, so the judges who are sitting there on the court, so they have to have binocular vision. Okay. Again, obviously we're not talking about somebody who's blind in both eyes. If they're blind in both eyes, so obviously there's Nega, it's out of the question. In other words, there's no way they could look at a Nega. The Chiddush is that even if you're blind in one eye, but that means that you could see, but you don't have the binocular vision, so you can't see a nega. You need the binocular vision. I'll suggest that it has to do with depth perception and the ability to see 3D. Okay? So but anyway, that's the halacha. So the same thing as halacha regarding judges.
Yeah, but that makes sense with the goyim, but with the
judging. That's exactly the point of the Gemara. Meaning that's what the hekesh is doing for us.
It's not a logical thing because
correct. The hekesh is telling us that. Right, the logic doesn't translate through, yeah. Right? If there is logic over here, yeah. But nevertheless, that's what a hekesh does. Umakish negaim l'rivim, and now we're going to go in the other direction. My rivim shelo bekrovim, maf negaim shelo bekrovim. So when you know a judge, if the judge has family relationship with the litigant, so he can't serve on the bench, that's called krovim. And the same thing now is true regarding negaim as well. So you can't have a family member look at a nega. So ima rivim b'shlosha, af negaim b'shlosha. Okay, so you have a hekesh. All right, so why don't we do the following? Why don't we bring the hekesh all the way through? So you know when it comes to a judge and judging a case, you need three judges. So why don't we say the same thing regarding saras? So you have not one kohen looking at you, you have three kohanim looking at you. Vidinhu. Amamona b'shosha gufa lo kol shekein. And not only that, not only do we have a hekesh, but quite frankly, it makes sense. If we're talking about mamon, what's money? Money is something that is external to you. Okay, we value it, but in other words, it's not part of you. And so for that, you need three judges. Something which is gufo, right? We value our body. And so for sure we're going to need three judges. That seems to be not only the hekesh, but it seems to be logical as well. So tamalamar v'uva el aharon ha-kohen, o el echad mi banav ha-kohanim. Ha-limanato she'afilo kohen echad ro'os ha-negayim. Okay, but we have a pasuk. Meaning despite the fact that there is a hekesh and there is also kal v'chomer, but the pasuk tells us that for negayim you can have one kohen taking a look at it.
So why don't you get the hekesh the other way? And say by then it should be one.
Right. Huh? Right. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. It's an excellent question. I don't have an answer ready, but okay. Hausamya dahave b'shivusei de Rav Yochanan dahave kadayin dina v'lo karmelei v'lo midi. Gemara tells the following story. There was a blind judge in the community of Rav Yochanan. Again, blind, we can qualify here, means not blind in both eyes, but blind in one eye. And he was judging, and nobody said anything. Rav Yochanan didn't object. So hecher avi hachiv am Rav Yochanan halacha kistam mishnah v'tanan kol kashal adon kashal ayv yish kashal ayv ve'in kashal adon v'amrin lasui mai v'am Rav Yochanan lasui suma ba'chas me'inav. So the Gemara asked the obvious question: how can Rav Yochanan allow that? How did he not object to the judge who was blind with in one eye? We have our mishnah. Our mishnah is stated anonymously. We have a rule that Rav Yochanan says any anonymous mishnah is a tell. It's a tip that the that we follow that position. That is the accepted halachic position. So our Mishnah says that there's a possibility to serve as a witness, but not as a judge, and that would be somebody who's blind in one eye, which means that our Mishnah is telling us that someone blind in an eye cannot serve on the bench. And meanwhile, Rav Yochanan allowed it in his community. How did all that happen? So Gemara's response, Rav Yochanan stamach rinash kechan. So the Gemara says, yes, you're right. Our Mishnah here in Ida is taking a very clear position. But there is another Mishnah, and that other Mishnah happens to be in Sanhedrin. And in just a moment, the Gemara is going to say, look, I have a Mishnah here in Ida, I have a Mishnah over there in Sanhedrin. Which one do you think is going to be more telling in terms of which the halacha follows? Anyway, so the Gemara is going to make that point. But first, let's learn the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Dinei Mamnos, Danim Bayom, V'Gomer B'Layla. So the Mishnah over there says that when it comes to Dinei Mamnos, so it can be judged during the day, and it could be concluded at night. What does that Mishnah have anything to do with a blind judge? Everything. Rashi points out that what do you see from that Mishnah? What you see from that Mishnah, Alma, I'm reading the Rashi, Alma lo makshinan rivim lenegayim. What the Mishnah is telling us is the Mishnah does not accept the Hekesh. Does not accept the Hekesh. Dechsiva vayom heiros bo. Uvayom heiros bo. Vechi hechad ilinyin laila lo mekesh leinyin sumanami lo mekesh. The author of this Mishnah in Sanhedrin clearly does not subscribe to the Hekesh. And once you don't subscribe to the Hekesh, so then, even though obviously a Kohen who cannot see with both of his eyes cannot see a Nega, but a judge who cannot see in both of his eyes can serve on the bench. That would be the Mishnah. That's the way Rashi understands it. So Rashi says that this Mishnah in Sanhedrin is a clear refutation of the Hekesh. Now, it kind of begs the question. I don't have an answer for this. The Hekesh is there.
Right.
We're looking right at it. And so it's kind of a strange question, and I don't know the answer. How can our Mishnah and Rav Meir adopt a Hekesh, and how can you refute a Hekesh? What's the counter argument?
It's
okay. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer.
The Hekesh is from the
Masorah,
isn't it?
Gzereshava, you need a Masorah. Hekesh, the Pasuk just simply puts two disparate ideas in the same Pasuk. That's a Hekesh. Okay. I'm sorry, just it's worth addressing. I just don't have an answer. Okay, so you have a Stam Mishnah over there in Sanhedrin. You have a Stam Mishnah over here in Nida. Our Mishnah subscribes to a Hekesh. The Mishnah over there in Sanhedrin does not subscribe to a Hekesh. And the nafka mina would be, can I have a judge who's blind in one eye? Our Mishnah says no. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin would say yes. And so, fine. So, why go with the Mishnah in Sanhedrin? Why not go with the Mishnah over here in Nida? So, first of all, the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you two reasons why. Reason number one, our Mishnah over here is going like the Shita of Reb Meir. How do I know that? Top of the Amud. Right, Ditanya, we learned in the Braisa, Haya Rebbe Meir Omer. So, our Mishnah is going like Reb Meir, Shitas Yachid, and the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which is also anonymous, but it could be going like the majority viewpoint, presumably. Ibai Sam, the Gemara says, and I'll give you another answer. Mishum de Katani la Gabi Hilchasa de Dayana. Also, location. Right? It's true by real estate. It's true by deciding which Mishnah is going to have more primacy. When it comes to asserting who could qualify as a judge, are we going to turn to a Mishnah Nida, which is teaching us to this Derech Agav, just incidentally, because of the theme of our Perek, or are we going to turn to the Mishnayos in Sanhedrin, which is the primary source of this topic? Okay. Right? Pun intended, I rest my case. Okay, thank you. The Mishnah, we are continuing now. Okay, so here we go. We know a food. So we could say a lot of things about a food, but we're going to keep our remarks down to the two points of our Mishnah. So a food, a produce, is chayiv in maizros. So there's a mitzvah of hafrashas trumas and maizros, produce that grow from the ground. So you have to separate and give percentages off to the Kohen, to the Levi. I'm not going to go through the schedule right now. Yeah, right? You've been with me long enough. You heard it enough times. It's always worth reviewing. But anyway, that is the chiv of maizros. We also know that food is subject to tamas ochlin. An edible food is eligible to become tameh when coming into contact with another source of tumah. It doesn't have to be an avatumah. It could be also a vlada tumah. A rishon touches another food, that second food becomes a sheni. If it's truma, it can become a shlishi. If it's kodesh, it can become a revi, etc., etc. So, in terms of foods, if it's subject to maestros, it's going to be certainly eligible to become tumas ochlin. However, the opposite is not true. There are those things that are subject to Tumas Ochlin, but are not subject to Maestros. Now, can you think what we're describing? I mean, if you're looking in the Gemara, you already see the answer is coming up in the next line. So the proteins, meat, fish, eggs, so they are not chayef to Trumas Maestros. They're not produce. And meanwhile, is it subject to Tumas Ochlin? Of course they are, meaning they are food. They're edible food. So those are the things that are subject to Tumas Ochlin, but are not subject to Trumas and Maestros. Next Mishnah. Let's now do another side-by-side comparison. And that is, we're going to be comparing the mitzvah of Peah to the mitzvah of Maestros. Maestros we just went over. Produce is chayev to Maestros. I will further qualify that statement in just a moment, which produce. But right now, let's just simply say produce. What about the mitzvah of Peah? So when you own a field, the corner of the field has to be dedicated to the poor. That's called the mitzvah of Peah. There's a masechta dedicated to this topic. And we're going to be learning a little bit of Mishnah to Peah this morning. The Mishnah teaches us that if it is subject to the chiyuv of Peah, it certainly will be subject to the chiyuv of Maestros. However, there are produce that are subject to the chiyuv of Maestros but are not subject to that of Peah. So the chiyuv of maestros is a more expansive chiyuv that includes and incorporates more produce than that of Peah. What does Peah not include? So good. That's going to be our discussion this morning. La'asuye mai. The Gemara's question, what are we talking about? What's on the chopping block from the chiyuv of Peah? La'asuye tein avierek she'enu chay bepeah. So we're talking about figs and vegetables that are not chayv in Peah. Now, figs and vegetables are not chayv in Peah. Now, before we go on in the Gemara, because we're going to learn the Mishnah in Peah in just a moment, let's think this through. So if for whatever reason, which we're going to learn in just a moment, figs and vegetables are not chayv in Peah, what do we say regarding maestros? They must be chayv in maestros. That's the clear understanding of our Mishnah and the Gemara. Take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi writes this consistently throughout Shas, and today is a good example. We look at Rashi. Rashi Divra Amascha Loketani. He says that that figs and vegetables are chayv and meiser. That's true, midrabanan, but not on a daraisa level. Only midrabanan. Omidaraisa lama chayv ela dagim v'tir shviyitzar. So Rashi over here writes that the only fruits that are chayv and shumas and meisers from the Torah is only the grain. We mean by that the five grains and grapes. And olives. And right, we just went through recently the Ramban and Chumash. The Ramban and Chumash says that even by grapes and olives. The Ramban and Chumash agrees with Rashi. It's only grains, grapes, and wine. Sorry, and olives. Thank you. The Ramban and Chumash in Parshas Re'eh, so he writes that even when it comes to grapes and olives, it's not grapes and olives that are chayv and shumas and maestros, min haTorah. It's only wine and olive oil. Only the finished product of grapes and olives.
Shema, right? Huh? In the Shema says.
Yeah, no, right. But no, the Shema doesn't talk about the chiyuv of Shumas and Maestros.
No, I'm just saying those are the
yes,
three things.
Yes, correct. But those.
You're not going to get the finished product on the corner of the field.
Right, but just to clarify, right now we're just talking about Maestros. Okay, we'll come back to Peah in just a moment. Okay. So so that's Rashi over here. Rashi says it throughout Shas. Rashi is super consistent about this point, that it's only grapes, olives, and grains that are chayv in Shumas and Maestros. But even according to Rashi, it's clear from the Gemara. Our Gemara is saying it. all other produce, meaning all other fruits and all vegetables, are chayiv in Shumas HaMaisos. It just happens to be the chayiv is midrabanan, not midaraisa. Okay, anyway. So, la'asuye mai, so let's go to our Gemara. We are in Nun Amud Aleph. We are two wide lines down. So our Mishnah says there are those things that qualify for Maisos but do not qualify for Peah. What are those items? La'asuyetein of Yerik is talking about figs and vegetables. She'eino chayiv b'peah, they're not chayiv b'peah. How do I know that? Did none. Now we learn together a Mishnah and Peah. The Mishnah and Peah is going to give us the five criteria that makes a fruit going to be eligible and obligated towards the mitzvah of Peah, meaning if it doesn't match all five of these criteria, so then there's not going to be a chiv of Peah. What are the five criteria? The Mishnah tells us, klamur b'peah. Here's the rule when it comes to Peah. Kol shu ochel has to be a food. We'll explain all five of these in a little better detail. It has to be a food. Nishmar, it has to be something guarded. Gidulam and arts has to grow from the ground. Likuto likitaso ke'echad. It has to be harvested at one time. Amachtiso likiyam. It's got, after harvesting, it's got to last a little bit. So, chayav bepeah, all these items, meaning these are the five criteria in order for a fruit to be chayav and peah. If it doesn't have all five, it's not going to be chayav and peah. Let's get clarification. What are these five? What do these five mean? So as far as ochel is concerned, look, there are some fruit that are harvested but only for dye. Even though they're edible, says Rashi. Right? Rashi thinks that these fruit are edible. Chamadumali, Rashi writes. Anyway, but still, the people typically grow these fruit to be used for dye. So if that's the intention in terms of why they're grown, So they don't qualify for the mitzvah peah. That's one. Two, nishmar, lemute hefker. Nishmar means there has to be an owner. If it is an ownerless field, there's no chiv of peah. Which kind of is, yeah. Thank you. Okay, I'm kind of, right, I appreciate the reaction. I really do. If there is no owner, so then, right, who's going to be taking off peah? Who am I talking to? Who's my audience? Okay. Okay. Kidulo min ha'aretz l'mu'ute k'meyem v'patrios. It has to grow from the ground. Mushrooms, the Gemara throughout Shas says it doesn't grow from the ground, meaning it doesn't get its unika from the ground. It's a fungus. Okay. Ulikitaso ka'ach l'mu'ute te'ina. Now figs, harvesting figs. Okay, so as you would probably guess, the number of experiences of life that I had in terms of harvesting figs right now still stands at zero. So I'm just assuming that the Gemara, this was common knowledge back then, and that when you harvest figs, they don't all come in at the same time, and you go out to the field and you pick a little bit, and you go out to the field a little bit later, you pick a little bit more. It is not all harvested at the same time. And finally, number five, machniso lekiyom, lemute yerek, and it is going to last. And what doesn't last? Vegetables, right? You go to the store, you get your vegetables, you come back home. We have refrigeration, so you know we're a little bit lucky in this regard. But without refrigeration, they're just simply not going to last. And so therefore, not subject to peah. Now, the Mishnah in Maisros, meaning we just learned the Mishnah in Peah. That was in the first parak of Peah. Now we're learning a Mishnah in Maisros. Now what are the qualifications for Maisros? So here by Maisros, it's down to three. It has to be a food, like we described earlier. It has to be a fruit that's planted and it is going to be eaten, planned to be eaten. Nishmar, there has to be an owner to the field, and gidulam, an arts that has to grow from the ground, not mushrooms. So chay b'maisos v'ilu l'kitas u'kechon u'machnis l'kiyam l'katani. Two of the five requirements for peah are not listed by maisos. And so that means to say that if you have figs and vegetables, so for maisos, chay v'nchumas maisos. According to Rashi, midrabanan. Both, by the way, according to Rashi, figs and vegetables are chayiv in shumas ha'maisos min derabanan. Fine, but as far as peah is concerned, they're not going to be chayiv in peah because figs are not harvested at the same time. Vegetables don't last. Fine, and that's the understanding of our Mishnah. Parenthetically, who's on the other side of this debate of shumas ha'maisos and which produce are chayiv in shumas ha'maisos min ha'Torah? So the Rambam's on the other side of this debate. And the Rambam says that all fruit are chayiv in shumas ha'maisos min ha'Torah, but not vegetables. The Rambam, he draws a line of de'oraisa de'rabanan, by fruits versus vegetables. Okay. Now, the Mishnah tells us, let's say the field had garlic and onions. Now, garlic and onions. So they last for a while. Okay, so in machnisa lekiyum, they last for a while. I'm assuming likitasu kachas, that they are going to, that they're harvested all at the same time. Okay. Didnan, malav nos, b'tzalim shebein hayerek, Rabbi Yossi Omer Peah, mikol achav achav achachamim omrim, me'achas al hakol. Let's say you have rows of produce. You have a row of non-Peah produce, followed then by a row of Peah produce. The Peah produce over here being onions and garlic. And I keep going and alternating between non-Peah produce, Peah produce, back and forth. So, clearly, the Peah produce need a sectioning off of the corner. How do I look at the field? Do I look at it as one field, or do I look at each row individually? And it's a machlokas hatanayim. So Rav Yossi says, Peah mi kol achas v'achas. Rav Yossi says, for each row. And the Chachamim says, me achas ala kol. No, it's treated all like one. Okay. Amar Rabba Barachanam Rav Yochanan, Ulshin Shazar mitchila lebehema. You have Ulshin. It's a vegetable. Rashi over here says that it is crispola. Okay. Doesn't do it for me, Phil. But whatever. It's a type of vegetable. Could be used, it could be eaten by humans, could be eaten by animals, and so the Gemara discusses. Amar Rav Yochanan Ulshin Shazar mitchila lebehema. It was planted originally for animals. It was planted as animal fodder. V'nimach alehem le'adam. But then, afterwards, a changing of the mind. Now, you know what? Let's not have the animals eat it. We're going to eat it. So, tzrichos machshava lichishi yitlishu. Okay. So now, it needs a machshava. Meaning, the fact that it was intended to be eaten by animals and not by humans when planted. So that now means that it is going to be, it is not going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Because the only things that are going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin is a food that's edible by human consumption. Since the original plan of these particular produce, this vegetable, was that it was going to be planted for animal consumption, so therefore it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay, and we changed our mind. The point now of the Gemara is that the only time it's significant is only when you change your mind after you detach it from the ground. But you can't change your mind while it's attached to the ground. Meaning while it's attached to the ground, it is, pun intended, is grounded. Which means that you're going to work with whatever the original intention was when you planted it. And the only time that you're eligible to change your mind is only after you detach it. The Gemara's discussion over here is no longer talking about Peah. The Gemara's discussion over here is Metame Tumas Ochlin. Right? Take a look at the top Rashi on the Amud Anun Amud Beis. So Letzricha Machshava La'achil V'Shuv Titame Tumas Ochlin Sheichashav Lam La'achit L'Shasan La'ochlan. So only from that point in time is it subject to Tumas Ochlin. V'Afagav Dekvar Chisha B'Chiburin Sharin Nimlach Aleim La'adam. Even though you already changed your mind while it was connected to the ground, that is not legally significant. The Gemara goes on to say, "Kasav machshava schibol oshmai machshava." So, okay, and a machshava while it's connected is not a machshava. It does not allow for a change of status. And the Gemara discusses this further. So, Amarava afanamitanina. I'm going to show you a Mishnah that corroborates this idea. It's the Mishnah in Taharos. Okay, the first Mishnah in Taharos. I don't want to speak about it like I'm so familiar with the first Mishnah in Taharos. It just happens to be, right, with the experience that we have in learning Gemara, we've just seen this first Mishnah numerous times. Why? Because the first Mishnah in Taharos talks about the special tama of Nivlas of Tahor, the carcass of a kosher bird. Carcass meaning the bird did not receive a proper shechita. And what happens with the carcass of a kosher bird? It does not give off tumas maga, nor does it give off tumas masa. It only gives off tumas ochlin. Now, I don't mean over here that it is subject to Tumas Ochlin. What we mean is it is actually metame. When a person ingests a kazayis of this bird, so that person now is going to become tame. Even though when you touch it, you don't become tame. Even though when you carry it, you do not become tame. It is a most unusual transmission, and that is, it is going to be tame when you ingest it. The Mishnah over there, 13 halachas that apply to Nivlasof Tahor. Okay. Yugimel dvarim nemer b'nevelas avtar v'zeacha mehem tzricha machshava v'ein tzricha hechsher. So, and it is that it requires machshava, but it does not require hechsher. It requires machshava. What does that mean? Rashi said tzricha machshava la'achila v'shuv titame me'aleha v'tachzor v'titame ochlim b'maga. Tahame ela kona machshava ein la tuma ela bebeis abliya. Meaning that before there was machshava, so a person who ingests it is going to become tame. But can it be an ochlin, meaning subject and eligible to become tame with contact with something else? So for that you need a machshava. And it makes sense, by the way, because it is a nevela. It's a carcass. No one's going to want to eat it. And for us Jews, it is, the problem is further exacerbated by the fact that it's not kosher. But even in, if there is, however, a machshava, you know what? I have my non-Jewish neighbor. He's kind of fine with it. I have a machshava. So the Mishnah over there says that it requires a machshava in order for it to become subject to Tumas Ochlin. Let me make this point even a little bit clearer.
Machshava is not the Rosh Hashanah right here.
The word machshava over here just simply means that there has
declaration.
To be a declaration, right? You need to, the thought has to be articulated. It just simply, in this context, it just simply means that there has to be verbal designation. I just want to be clear about all this. When it comes to the carcass of a dead bird, so it is an av hatumah, but again, not through manga, not through masa, only by ingesting, only by eating it. It also is a food, which means then that based on the halachas of tumas ochlin, if another item were to touch it, let's say, for example, a sheretz were to touch it, it becomes tameh. But only if it's a food, meaning it's an edible food. It's a nevela. And we're not going to eat it. The Jews are not going to eat it. So how can it become an edible food subject to external tumah? The answer is a machshava. When the person says and makes a declaration and says, oh, you know what? I'm not going to eat it, but I'm going to, or, you know, I know it's even a little bit uncomfortable, but let's say the person just doesn't care that it's not kosher. In other words, he plans on eating it anyway, whatever the case is. If there's a machshava that either he or somebody else is going to eat it, so then it's subject and eligible to become tumas ochlin. That is the Mishnah. And oh, by the way, it doesn't need hechsher. In other words, for it to become tameh, it doesn't have to come into contact with a liquid, even though foods generally do have to come into contact with a liquid. Anyway, we'll come back to that point. Ama machshavas chayim lo shmei machshava. So, machshava does help, but only after the animal died. While it's alive, a machshava will not help. So what the Gemara now is doing is going to make the following logical leap. When you see that by a bird, a machshava, to give it the designation of tumas ochlin, is only going to be effective after the bird is dead. So too, when it comes to a plant growing out of the ground, if the original intent was that it wasn't going to be consumed by humans, and then later a change is going to be made, the change is only significant after it's detached from the ground, much like a machshava is only significant by a bird after it's dead. Okay, I know it's not exactly the same. It's a leap.
Usually.
Okay.
Fine.
Would
it be the same thing if he has vegetables that he intends to only give to animals, even though it's edible?
Right. Right. Well, that's what the Gemara was describing.
No,
so
no, but I'm saying that normally, if it's a regular vegetables, you don't need intent because.
Okay. Fine.
It's only those which.
I hear.
You would need.
Yeah. So the Gemara is just describing something that was planted clearly for the intent of consumption by an animal. Okay. Alma machshavas chayim lo shema machshava, hachanam machshavas chibah lo shema machshava. Fine. Rabbi Zera amar hacha begozo shenafa min haram, askinan. Delo hava kaman delech shev aleihem. So the Gemara says, not necessarily, meaning, I'm not sure if you're right about this. It could very well be that the Mishnah in Taharos is just giving a description of something that not came out of nowhere, but basically we only got our hands on it from after it died. But it could very well be that the halach is that the machshav is going to be significant even before it's dead. So what about the Tarnagol Shabiyavna? Tarnagol Shabiyavna, take a look at Rashi. We're going to see in just a moment. There were kusim over there. And there was a machshava to eat it, even though it wasn't kosher, and nevertheless it required a machshava. So Amalei Tarnagol Barahava. So he says, well, wait one second. That's a wild tarnagol. So that doesn't conform to our discussion. So achichala tarnagol bara of tamehu. So the Gemara says tarnagol bara, this, you know, whatever kind of bird it is, it's not a kosher bird. Of tameh mika mitamya. It doesn't fit into our discussion at all. Meaning we're talking about nivlas of tahor. Okay? Here's the one thing that we know about nivlas of tahor. It only applies to a kosher bird. It doesn't apply to a non-kosher bird. So this special tumah that we're describing is only by a kosher bird. So how can you introduce a type of bird that's not even kosher into the discussion? So Abai says, look, Rabbi Zera is somebody very significant. And he says something. And be careful about laughing about things that people say, especially in general, but especially when the person is saying it is somebody who's a gavir abba. So batanagola shemarda. My brother, the Ivrai Memara. Over here, wild does not mean that it's a species. Wild over here just simply means that it was contained, it got away, but it was a kosher bird. Rapapa Amar Tarnagola is the Agma Havai. Rapapa gives a different suggestion. It was a swamp tarnagolas. And that's why we only discovered it after it died. Again, all these answers are just leading us to the idea that the Mishnah in Taharos is specific. It's circumstantial. Meaning, enachinami, a machshava would work even before the bird is dead. The Mishnah is just describing various birds that are from the wild, from the swamp. We got the birds after they died. That's all. So, tarnagolosa da agma havai, rapapa latami da rapapa tarnagol ad agma asur, tarnagolosa da agma sharya. Now, there are two types of tarnagol da agma. There's a species called tarnagol da agma, and there's a species called tarnagolosa da agma. The one that has the male name, that's Aser. The one that has the female name, that's going to be Mutter. V'simancha, Amoni v'lo Amonis. And just a great mnemonic to help us remember which one's which. So you know that somebody who comes from the nation of Amon, and Moab for that matter, so you can marry the female, can't marry the male. They can convert, but you can't marry the male. You can only marry the female. Same thing over here. There is a Tosus over here. So the Tosus also is in Chulin as well. And it's such an interesting discussion. We just identified a bird. I don't know much about it. The swamp bird. Okay, let's call it the swamp bird. The Gemara says that the male version is also the female version is mutter. Now, the way I tried explaining the Gemara just moments earlier is that we're not talking about male versus female. We're just talking about there were two different species. One was given a male name, and the other one was given a female name. Okay, take a look at Tosus over here, second Tosus on the Amud. So Tosus quotes a pshat. Targalosa da agma hazacha asa lefi shein lo simani tahara velo shari mitam kol yotzim natar tar shari ha'im lo yalda hafroach ela beitzim mitila vafroach me'afra kagadol v'nesar mimela ayidei simani tuma unikeva nami ein lo osra laman da asar zev zegarin da hafroach lo yasa ela min ha'beitza ume'afra kagadol kedepricious. Okay, Tosus offers a pshat. I'm going to simplify Tosus's point because he's taking a lot of other things into consideration, which I'm not going to bring up right now. But Tosus offers a pshat that it's one species. The female would be permitted and the male would be prohibited. Why? Because the Mishnah in Chulin gives us ways to identify kosher versus non-kosher birds. Interesting. The Torah does not give us ways of identifying. When it comes to animals, the Torah gives us clear identifications of kosher versus non-kosher. Split hooves, chewing of the cud. When it comes to birds, the Torah does not do that. What does the Torah do? It identifies 24 different types of birds that are not kosher. The rest of them are kosher. However, the Chachamim in the Mishnah in Chulin gives us ways, four different ways of identifying which is a kosher bird, which is a non-kosher bird. And Tosos over here writes, he entertains this idea that when I have this swamp bird, so the female who exhibit the signs, so they're going to be kosher. The male that don't exhibit the sign, so they're not going to be kosher.
Even though they come from the same
sign based on gender. No, that's what he's saying. Even though they're hatched from the
same. And then, right. And then Tosos then has to deal with, well, you know, based on sexual reproduction, right. So I need the two of them in order to get to the next generation. So that's right. Kol ha'yotzim min ha'kosher kosher. Right. So how does that work for the next generation? That's what Tosos is dealing with. But just, I'm just right now focusing on the point of Tosus is really entertaining an idea that it's one species and the difference between kosher and non-kosher is male versus female. Because the female exhibits signs of kosher and the male doesn't. Read on in Tosus, by the way, where he doesn't seem to enjoy that pshat. He doesn't appreciate that pshat. Anyway, okay, let's just do a little bit more for this morning.
Saying that with the egg, it doesn't from the egg, like it dissolves the egg, and yeah, that's why it could be a
correct. Difference. Correct. Darsh Mareimar Tanagalosa da Agma Asira. Mareimar Darshan the following publicly, he said that the Tanagalosa da Agma is prohibited against what we just said. So, Chazir Rabbanan de Darsa Va'achla. Vahainu Gerusa. Now, but the Chachamim investigated, and they saw that this animal, I'm sorry, the bird was Dares, and ate wild Dares, right? One of the signs of a non-kosher bird, and they identified it as a Gerusa. Tan Rabbanan. Let's stop here. Okay, you know what? It's a good place to stop. We'll pick it up tomorrow from the Braisa. Okay, let's quickly recap. Okay, again, our Mishnah now continue the theme of two factors, which one can exist without the other. So our Mishnayos today covered sitting on the bench versus being a witness. Anybody who is eligible to sit on the bench can serve as a witness, but the opposite's not true. And as I pointed out at the beginning of this morning, it is counterintuitive, but you can, there are people who can testify but cannot judge. And that would be, as we learned in today's daf, somebody who's blind in one eye. Somebody who's blind in one eye. So he can see, so he can testify, but he can't serve on the bench. And is there a logic to it? It's hard to really find the logic. The Gemara says it's a hekesh. It's a hekesh in Parsha Shoftim. Does everyone subscribe to this hekesh? So we learned this morning that no, not everyone subscribes to it. The Mishnah Sanhedrin does not subscribe to the hekesh. Again, I asked a question earlier this morning. I don't have an answer. How could you reject a hekesh? How does that work exactly? Okay. I'm sorry. I don't have clarity. Rav Yochanan sided with the Mishnah Sanhedrin that does not subscribe to the Hekesh and not our Mishnah over here. And the Gemara gave a couple of reasons why he did that. Then we went on to agricultural halacha. The Mishnah taught us that if something is subject to Maisros, it for sure will be subject to Tumas Ochlin, but something can be subject to Tumas Ochlin but not subject to Maisros. And what would that be? That would be your proteins. Meat, fish, eggs. So they're certainly subject to Tumas Ochlin but not subject to Trumas and Maisers, obviously, they're proteins. The last Mishnah that we covered today is Peah versus Maisros. There are more requirements for a food, for a produce, to be Chayiv to Peah as opposed to Maisros. By Peah, there are 5 requirements. By Maisros, only 3. We compared and contrasted. Figs and vegetables are subject to Trumas and Maisros, but are not going to be subject to Peah. And then the Gemara's discussion of Machshava. I plant a produce with the intent that it was going to be eaten by animals, and now I want to change my mind. The only eligible time to change your mind, said the Gemara, is only after you pulled it out of the ground. A machshava during chibur, whilst grounded, is a non-binding, it's not a legal changing designation. Is the same thing true regarding birds and Tumas Ochlin? A lengthy discussion, a Mishnah in Taharos. Subsequent discussion of the Mishnah in Taharos, unclear. But certainly by produce, the Gemara said it very clearly, that you can only change its designation after you pull it out of the ground, and not before so.